Senator Bay.
Here.
Representative Fuller.
Here.
Bert Charney.
Here.
Jack Chenoweth. Senator Eliason.
Here.
Carol Berger.
I'm here for Carol Berger.
William Houston. Houston, excuse me. Lois Jun. Ken Kareem.
Here.
Linda McCurry.
Here.
Greg O'Clery. John Pugh.
Here.
Sherry Shelley.
Darlene Livermore for Sherry Shelley.
Mr. Houston just arrived.
You got on the work permit there.
We do have a quorum, Mr. Chairman.
You have a quorum, right? Okay, the first order of business, we have a membership vacancy on the commission. And we have applications from the Human Rights Commission. And we have an application from Vernelia Randall. And Chief Bueller. Oh, University of Alaska. And Chief Bueller from Rome. I thought we had another application from Juno.
Mr. Chairman, I had spoken with Merlin Peters, Pete Peters, who had originally expressed an interest in being a member of the commission. He is now working for the division of EEO and felt that since the Department of Administration had a seat on the commission, and since he is working very hard in that position, he would not have the time nor did he feel that it would be appropriate. I also spoke with Katie Hurley of the Commission on the Status of Women, and she repeated that the Commission on the Status of Women is supporting the Human Rights Commission membership on the Blue Ribbon Commission. They had hoped to get us a letter, but the CRC is sending things to Mars instead of to Juno or something.
Okay. Let's just hold this for a little later. Is there any public testimony?
I don't believe so.
Okay. We had some discussion last meeting concerning the problems on patents and some of the things that were done on the where the state's time and the private time were kind of mixed together and nobody could understand exactly what the situation was, whether the... So we looked to see if we had any existing statutes on that, and apparently we don't have anything that is worthwhile. So we have some, we have a draft here on possible legislation relating to government interests and discoveries and inventions made by public officers and employees of the state. Do you all have that?
There are extra copies if anyone wants. I had asked Mayor, who was the drafter, to be here, and he noticed that he is not. I also let the Council of Science and Technology know that the draft was before the commission today.
And who was the fellow that was supposed to be here?
Jim Mayor, the drafter on the bill to explain.
So why isn't he here?
I don't know.
Well, why don't we start and then just go down through this thing anyway, and if there's any comments, just leap right in there. on the first section that except as provided in 040, so we'll take a look and see what 040 says, acceptance. We're not part of public offices and employees associated with the University of Alaska, the Alaska Energy Center, or the Alaska Resources Corporation. I wonder why.
My suspicion, but I don't know for sure, is that they already have arrangements on discoveries for those employees, but I don't know. That was one of the questions.
Okay, that's one of the questions that we'll have here. Because I don't know if you're working, if you're working for the state, then what's the difference?
I know that the University of Alaska does have a policy on that issue. The other two entities, I don't know.
All right, here, maybe B will tell us. All right, title. An interest in discovery or venture made by a public officer associated with an entity listed in A of this section and inures to the benefit of the respective entity in accordance with the general policy statute by saying, okay, policy that may provide for ownership control. Okay, that's all right. Instead of going to the state, it goes to the agency. I don't see anything wrong with that. Do you? Does anybody see anything wrong with that? Now, if the invention is made during working hours, with a contribution by the state of the
Chairman, Mr. Lear, the drafter,
is here
if you want him to.
Would you sit down at the table, Mr. Lear, and let us go down through this thing with you? Or why don't you walk us through it, and then if we have any questions, we can ask you.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Jim Lear. I'm from the Legal Services Division. Perhaps it'd be good if I just did a little background on this to bring me up to date on what Alaska's got and what other states have pertaining to patents by public employees. In Alaska, we have two provisions addressing patents by what could be public employees. One is found in the law pertaining to the Alaska Energy Center, which authorizes them to hold patents for their purposes, and also a similar type of authorization for the Alaska Resources Corporation, but there's nothing that applies generally to employees, whether state employees, university employees, or personnel. Other states, there's one out of 50 states that has a provision that addresses patents by state employees, and that's the state of Connecticut.
Half a dozen other states address patents by university employees, or as a parallel to our Energy Center and Resources Corporation, they may address what happens to patents by research centers. Now, there is also a federal provision pertaining to patents by employees, and that was had its inception in 1950 in the Uniform Government Patent Policy for Federal Employees, for inventions by government employees. It's an executive order, not an act of Congress, but Congress apparently didn't do anything about it because that's been amended a couple of times since and currently is what is used at the federal level today. The state of Connecticut and the state of, and this federal provision then, formed the basis of the draft with also some deference to those provisions that are found in the policy adopted by the University of Alaska. There are some factors as far as the issues. First issue in drafting the proposal is what factors determine when the state is entitled to an interest in an employee's invention or discovery. And secondly, what should be the extent of the interest acquired by the state, keeping in mind two elements. One is that the state should definitely benefit from discoveries made at its expense, but there also might be some thought given to whether or not taking a total interest, acquiring a total interest, would stifle the employee's creativity and her chance to come up with some brilliant new discovery. So that's an issue too. And then a third issue is what entity holds title to the patents by state employees. Is there a state agency or a board? And federal level, they had a patent board, and then they did away with that. So they no longer have a patent board. And some of them need to settle the disputes as to the extent of the state's interest or what employee may in fact be entitled to an interest. And the fourth and the last factor that I have noted would be, should there be exceptions to a broad state policy, for example, for the University of Alaska or for the research type centers? And then section by section, this first of all, I assigned this to the title which pertains to public officers and employees, and that's Title 39 as a new chapter 52. The first section in that chapter, rights to discoveries and inventions, property of the state, that is pretty much the glean from the executive order.
Okay, so
they do it at the federal level.
If I can interrupt you right there, Mr. Lear. You said it's a discovery or invention made by a public officer or employee and inures solely to the benefit of the state. Shouldn't we say it belongs to the state?
Mr. Chairman, that would be a short way of saying it. It would be the same thing.
Yeah, why don't we just say, because further back here you say it belongs to, you talk about belonging to the state. Do you talk about property of the state? Is it property of the state? So maybe we should. All right. Why don't we just, if you like the language that's there, why don't we just add, when you say inures solely to the benefit of the state, there is the argument that you couldn't use it. Nobody else could use it but the state.
Mr. Chairman, I believe if we had other provisions, which we do here, that indicate the state has the authority to dispose of that interest, that wouldn't be contradictory. But the point's well taken. I see from my breakdown here that these different terms come from using the federal language in one and the state of Connecticut's language on the second page. But just to make it uniform.
Could we say inures solely to the benefit of it and is the property of the state?
I think that might be redundant, Mr. Chairman. It belongs to the state or is the property of the state, but use uniform terminology throughout.
All right, so then let's knock off.
Is the property of the state, for a chance, would be better.
Yeah, let's knock off the benefit to the state and put in and is the property of the state. Is there any objection to that? And there's no doubt about it. Okay, you want to go ahead then?
As I mentioned, Mr. Chairman, this is the federal, pretty much the federal language. They break down the factors that should be evaluated in determining whether or not the invention made by an employee should in fact belong to the state. And these are just a good starting point for the committee to consider. They obviously have been scrutinized at the federal level, and those have stayed pretty much intact since it had its executive order had its inception in 1950. So probably be fairly safe starting point.
Do we have a question here that says if a public officer employee makes a discovery, this is on page 2, start line 4, makes a discovery or invention that is the property of the state, state public officer employee is obligated to assign to the state the entire right, title, and interest of the block to them.
I think that, Mr. Chairman, this is just a safe way of perfecting a patent. Come in, and in essence, the employee or public officer that made the discovery invention is, in essence, signing a document that says, for purposes of patenting, I don't have any interest in this.
Perhaps we should further designate assigning all of his interest. Now, I see what you're saying. The public officer is obligated to assign to the state.
Technically, when a person discovers something, it's his right, unless someone else comes in and says, it's your right, but I happened to pick up your meal ticket while you made that discovery, and I have a common law right, and that's what we're operating under right now. If you just have to rely on common law, kind of a employer-employee relationship when it comes to discovery. So subsection A sets forth the factors that are relied on in determining whether or not the state has an interest in subsidy, sets forth the responsibilities of the employee, the obligation of the employee to help the state protect its rights in the patent.
Would it be proper to, on line 9, to change D to his?
Not since we have a requirement now that we use gender neutral.
Well, his or hers. Okay.
Then we would have to say, I'm admitting the public officer or employee's entire life title.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Is Connecticut's law as broad in terms of, it seems to me in Section A, number 2, where we talk of information, that gets pretty broad in terms of, for example, somebody has a little bit of information on the basis of education as well as probably, you know, working in a given field, they would gain a little more. But then they take that outside and work on their own, let's say weekend nights, whatever else, on an invention. It seems like by saying information, that broadens that to where the state has pretty much an interest almost on anybody who's working at any time. I mean, if you're in a professional career of any kind, it's going to be impossible for you to do anything in that field outside of post-employment that would fall under this definition. And I guess I just wondered with Connecticut statute is flawed, is that I think it may be a middle ground in terms of.
I looked at that too, and then I went back to Wilbert and I had all kinds of funny ideas.
Well, I can understand if somebody's working, you know, doing the job. It's on working hours. Discovers whatever. It's very clear. If somebody uses materials of the state, equipment of the state to do it, I think that's fairly clear. Information gets to be a little fuzzy because it's hard to determine whether that information was acquired through, you know, professional education, and mental past education, other things of that nature. And in fact, just by, it's sort of incidental that by working in that field that they're gathering more information. They may well gather more of that at home by reading journals as well as working on things on weekends and other things.
So, Mr. Litter?
Mr. Chairman, in response to that question, I've observed that there isn't as much detail in the factors in Connecticut's law. They use language in regards to these factors, something as follows: in any instance in which such invention is conceived in the course of performance of customary or assigned duties of the employee inventor or inventors, or in which the invention emerges from any research, development, or other program of the state, or is conceived or developed wholly or partly at the expense of the state, or with the aid of its equipment, facilities, or personnel. And it doesn't mention information. However, I think this is a good point to discuss the fact that you see that there are definitely going to be some gray areas, and that it's necessary to have some arbiter. And it's not something that can be self-implementing. And to answer, address all of those gray areas in the bill would be impossible, so it really would be important to have somebody that would determine, do you really have an interest in this? And they would then look at, well, the information you got from the state was really nothing. You could have done it on your own without that. The chance that's where information would not be so critical then when it comes to the arbitration stage.
So I think Connecticut tax is a little higher than the would it be possible for us to get copies of that? It just seems to me that Connecticut section is a little tighter than the federal. The federal seems a little broader from the way this is written. The federal section. It really depends on how you define tighter. If I were trying to decide whether or not someone has the right, looking at the federal, you have more guidelines. So I would get tighter in it. Determine more easily whether or not there is an interest. But the point of whether or not it should be tight or should be broad.
Yeah, I was thinking from the other way.
I can provide that language.
Yeah, you got some going, John? Yeah.
No, I just have some real question about, you know, in listening to individual last time, I think that that's exactly, you're right about arbiter. The individual who was before us last time, it's going to be a real difficulty on case after case of determining what part is actually information gathered from the employment with the state and what part of the information is stuff that comes with it. In this case, the individual is claiming that the information was available to him prior to state employment here. It was available to him as employment in Arkansas. Now, there's a question of whether the path belongs to Arkansas, maybe, but as far as, you know, his claim, I'm not saying it's right or not, but some arbiter is certainly going to have to make that decision.
Well, when you say information, that's a pretty broad thing. I mean, he could be sitting there and pick up a piece of paper and just read something off of it, and it has a negligible contribution. It wasn't any of any, but I don't know.
Mr. Chairman?
Ken?
I think what counsel has suggested here to us is a broader one, and that therefore would provide the opportunity as we get later on in the bill to look at it on a case-by-case basis. And I think that would be best in the state's interest, because there's going to have to be determinations like that on a case-by-case basis.
Well, not only the state's interest, but I think the individual.
Knowing the bureaucrat's mentality, now the next thing you're going to want is a bunch of rules and regulations.
You're going to have to permanent commission with commission.
Yeah, we'll have to have a commission there, and then have a bunch of rules and regulations, and by the time you get done, nobody will know what the heck
I think
going.
They already found a commission to look at.
It's under the Administrative Procedures Act. There you go. That wasn't a denigrating remark, Ken. I don't know.
I interpreted that to be a comment about the Council on Science and Technology.
Right.
Mr. Chairman,
you got it.
Mr. Chairman, before I go into the next section there, 020, I have to just give you a chance again, maybe to look through there. And those are really the weight and matters, I think.
I think the word or information is so nebulous there that I don't know how you really could put it down to you. Really? Or information, I don't know what that means. You could use anything.
Well, I can understand, you know, there are cases where what they're talking about is, in fact, let's say somebody, a good example may be to use the fishing game example, or, you know, the fish processing example we had last time. Let's say that the state has developed a process that is fairly good and that information is available, and somebody then takes that process and makes a minor change in that process, which then is patented. And of course, then what they're utilizing is the information that was already available for the state. Yeah, just and that's where I think it gets into problem, because the individual is saying that in certain types of science, processes can be patented. Not just equipment, not just materials, but actual processes can be patented. And so there has to be something to cover that. And I guess information, one way of doing it is just, I would just question. You know,
yeah, we should put in there published information. Would that have any benefit? In other words, if it isn't down in writing, what the hell you got? Somebody else is, two guys talking?
But if it's published information, then it's public information and anyone can request it and use it.
I don't have an answer, Mr. Chairman. I think that the best thing to do is to allow some leeway there and then let the arbiter decide whether or not this information was something that anyone could have gotten off the street. Or some inroad there, and therefore, because he had an inroad, and the state ought to have some benefit from divulging that information.
Well, if we're going to build a garage, we're going to make sure we get a door on it. Ken?
Mr. Chair, would it help any of you say, or information not otherwise available?
Terry?
First, my memory escapes me. All information of the state is public information unless it is specifically made confidential by statute. And it's very...
Not work papers and stuff like that, is it?
Not work product, but anything else. You can request and review anything.
That's true.
We frequently do that.
Yeah, but it is too. If there's three or four, there's three or four guys that are working on a project and they get a bunch of worksheets together, that isn't public information. And the guy figures it out from that, that wouldn't be public information.
And the results of that work product is typed up and printed up in place of public.
Lots of luck. That's what it says, but it never happens that way. There's so much stuff that isn't put down that nobody knows what's going on, except Fred. Well, for your information, let's go buy that one for now.
But underline that, because we've got to figure that one out. Maybe we can do it later on here some way. Thanks for bringing that up, John.
Mr. Chairman, a brief explanation of subsection C. If the state decides we don't want to do anything with this particular discovery invention, it doesn't seem that it would be fair to the employee to have the state kind of sit on that thing when maybe he's going to use his own time and energy to go out and develop it. And I think that's what this is intended to address, so that the right doesn't sit there in limbo. Did the state act on it, or they waive their right to it? That may or may not be a good thing, but at least the proposal for your consideration, keeping in mind that the individual might have some interest that needs to be protected too. So under subsection C1, paragraph 1, the state in that case would just wash their hands of the interest totally. And an alternative would be, well, we might use this, but we don't want to go to the trouble of patenting it. We don't know whether it's going to be worth all that much. But just in case you do, we'd like to reserve the license, or a license to use it for the purposes of the state, to grant a license in that use, a royalty-free license. So they may not develop it and sell the idea themselves, but they could use it without having to pay the employee.
It's reasonable.
If there aren't any other questions, I'll go quickly over 020. This is mostly Connecticut's law. They're trying to give a fair shake to the employee. The federal government didn't. They said, we've got it all, unless we decide we don't have any. This is all or none, pretty much how they approach it. But Connecticut used this figure of 20%. Well, you come up with an invention and it's ours, but we'll let you share in it to the tune of 20%, and then that could be altered too. If the council agreed to alter that amount upward. I'd observe for the commission's benefit that the University of Alaska's policy has a 15% factor in there. Just to bring the idea up, I went with the Connecticut language. And the subsection B, I accepted. The provisions of this section, though, the right term there, now that I think about it, but an individual who comes on contract for the specific purpose, perhaps of developing an idea that ends up in a patent. It might be that he ends up with half under contract or nothing, just a lump sum payment. That gives a little bit of leeway so that if someone's put on and has an independent contract, it will.
I think that's more what I contemplate here, and maybe we should change that language with referring to him as a public officer employee, or at least broaden it to include public officer employee or independent contractor or contractor or contracting party, some such language.
I have a question about that one, Title 39. That would not be normal, having Title 39. You know, we're talking about an individual who really is not an employee of the state, but is an independent contractor. And in fact, the state, through its contracting mechanism, can, in an individual contract, indicate, contract terms, indicate that any discoveries and so on. You know, we have another mechanism to do that. And I wonder if that belongs in this statute under officers' employment.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. What this is clarifying that this provision, which is located in 39, does not apply to contracting parties.
Oh, okay. I was thinking you were saying it does apply.
The provision of A do not apply to public officer employee, and I think we should insert or contracting party.
Who has executed a contract of employment, contrary terms.
Fine.
Okay.
This sets up an arbitration procedure.
And incidentally, we've already
glossed over the fact that this is going to be under the, according to this proposed draft, would be under the purview of the Alaska Council on Science and Technology. But this council would have to come up with some rules for determining arbitration procedures under these guidelines set out as paragraph 1, 2, and 3.
There could be voluntary arbitration if the
employee agrees to be bound, and the state also agrees to be bound by the arbitration, or compulsory arbitration if there's a contract that provides you that, or if it's not voluntary or compulsory under contract, then they would resort to the court system.
I think this takes care of our information problem, right?
I think there'd be enough opportunity for that.
Yeah, I think that would take care of that.
Yeah, it wouldn't shut the door to consideration. And then there'll be rulemaking authority for arbitration.
If I could interrupt, just Mr. Bennett, do you know what we're looking at here?
This is really the first opportunity that I've had to look at this. So.
Well, this is join the group.
What we're doing is we're going down to this is the person from the Legislative Affairs Agency that drafted the proposed legislation, and he's just walking us through it.
Mr. Chairman? Sir? I'm wondering from counsel, if there's a significant advantage here in having the Council on Science and Technology set up their own rules for arbitration instead of accepting the
statutes that already exist on arbitration under the court's jurisdiction, the Uniform Arbitration Act and stuff.
After I drafted this, I considered whether or not it'd be wise to rely on the arbitration provisions in the statute. I don't have any preference either way. This is pretty much how they did it in Connecticut, but I didn't look to see whether or not they had a Uniform Act on arbitration. I don't see any advantage one way or another, or I should say I don't see any advantage to drain from the general provisions of arbitration. But I haven't ever served in that capacity on a commission. So.
Would you check and see if there are any major differences between what you have down here and the existing arbitration law?
Okay.
I don't see any, but I don't know, because I don't know what the arbitration law says.
Oh, yeah, I think it's moving up there.
only been on his back once before, I've noticed.
It's early yet. It's only 20 minutes to 3.
Exceptions. Chairman, I didn't know how to treat the University of Alaska. They already have a policy, but maybe this should be included and should be required to have their policy comport with this gen provision before the commission for their consideration.
Well, they are an entity. They are, although they are of the state, they are a separate entity, legal entity, and such. I don't have anything as far as. Personally, I think that they should be excluded because they run their own operation. We don't run it for them.
Most of the provisions from other states that deal with universities do give a broad coverage to the broad latitude for the universities to handle patents and copyrights and trademarks.
Well, they're a legal entity unto themselves, and they had a...
And that's where the bulk of the research comes in. As far as Alaska Energy Center and Alaska Resources Corporation,
Representative Fuller, I have a question.
Yeah. Well, they already, the university research has a policy.
Okay. Yes, they do, and regulations implementing that policy.
No. Go ahead, sir. Ken, did you
go ahead and suggest another approach might be that in the absence of those regulations, I assume administratively they can change them whenever they get around to agreeing on them. Or abolish them. Maybe here the Board of Regents could promulgate regulations which would exempt themselves from these, but in the absence of any, these would apply to the university.
But for this exception, in this statute, this would accept them. And that's
as long as the Board of Regents has promulgated their own, that's it. But if they ever get into just wiping them out entirely or abolishing them, this is the safety net.
No, this is an exception. This removes them from any consideration.
Unless we were to amend this language, which provides an exception for them.
I would just assume just leave them out of it because let them handle their own thing. We have enough problems with the university.
The commission should consider whether or not the Alaska Energy Center and the Alaska Resources Corporation ought to be accepted. All that they have in those provisions, respective provisions on patenting, is the fact that those entities can hold the title to patents. So we're not really covering all of our bases unless we allow them to just contract and provide by contract for the same type of thing that's set out here for public officers and employees in general. But there is a bit of a hold there. An employee of the Energy Center wouldn't have the same rights, for example, that are set out here, nor would the center be obligated to proceed under these provisions. But maybe it's best to amend 4612 and 3712 and strike that language which says that they are entitled to hold patent. I think it's advisable to have one entity holding the patent rights and managing patent rights, and that's why I suggest the council on science do that. They're set up pretty much geared towards research in a broad way. And in which case we would strike the exception language here and only have University of Alaska be accepted, and then include an amendment in 4612, an amendment in 3712 in this bill, which would repeal those subsections that grant authority to those respective centers to hold patents. The more I think about it, I think that's probably the more advisable.
Yeah. Well,
but I am not from the Energy Center nor the Resources Corporation. Maybe we ought to get some input from them on that topic.
Well, you know what that's going to be before you start.
I wonder if they presently hold any.
Any patents?
Surprised they're even in existence yet.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir?
The Alaska Energy Center is on the books, but they are not funded, so inoperative.
They don't do much research, evidently.
Yeah, they were unfunded last year.
How about the Alaska Resources Corporation?
I don't know about them, but the Energy Center and all the management of business they demonstrated when they did exist.
I wonder about
They patent everything.
They
in the
were
world.
Patently incompetent.
But miss, if we are going
is
to
that
make
part of your shop, Fred? No, that was Commerce.
Oh,
that was Commerce.
If we are going to make exceptions for certain entities here, I don't know why we couldn't continue on with this logic. And if the Division of Corrections comes up with some new security system, that they could get the patent for that also, and Fish and Game can acquire patents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like for some consistency, we ought to kind of go one way or the other. The state of Alaska is going to hold it.
Well, the only thing is the Alaska Energy Center is an entity unto itself again, see? And the Division of Corrections isn't. That's part of the state administration. And so is the other guy. What I'm saying is those entities that are legal entities, it's a policy question whether you want to treat them differently or you want to treat them as, although they are, I don't know how it would come about under a legal position. If they're an entity under themselves, even though they are funded by the state, they aren't under the jurisdiction of the state.
The only difficulty I have with it from a drafting standpoint is that I can't just leave those two sections which allow them to hold patents on the books and then have another provision that says that the council holds patents.
Yeah.
And
should be one.
That's one aspect of the right to hold title and to manage the patents. But the other is the applicability to the employees of those respective entities also. But if they're not doing anything, it doesn't hurt to accept them. I mean, they can't do anything, mismanage something that they don't have.
And if they become a problem, we can always correct it.
Well, one other thing, they are public officers of the state, though. They're in exempt category, if I remember right? So they are public officers. And in that sense, it seems to me that this law ought to apply to all public officers. I mean, so I would think that we ought to amend them and put the patents in one place and let the law apply to all public officers and employees. And it doesn't make sense to me to have one employee of the state apply to and another employee they don't. Even though they're in a separate entity, they're exempt employees right. Under the state and paid by state paychecks, just like everybody else. So,
Mr. Chairman, another thought along that line, though, is that because they are independent and because they're research-oriented, they're in theory, should be coming up with something that could be patentable. And then you have an employee of the center going to the council saying, I want a patent, and the council saying, there isn't anything that we want to do with it, we will waive all right title and interest. And the energy center heads are saying, what are you doing waiving right to that patent? He developed it under our time, and you get this fight going between the leadership or the head of the energy center and the council when it comes to management of or disposition of possible interest in discoveries or inventions. So it may be best just to leave them out there on their own or address that issue of the interrelationship between those entities and the council when it comes to management.
What's the feeling of the fish?
I'd like to repeal those two sections. I think that the proper place of the patents would be in one place, the state.
You mean to eliminate the Energy Center and the Resource Corporation?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You make that motion?
So I'm going to have that clarified. For the purposes of this bill, you would mean to repeal those individual subsections in their grant of authority sections that say you have the power to hold title patents, trademarks, and also to repeal that. There are other things other than patent.
I'd like to repeal the Energy Center. I don't think that's possible.
Maybe it'd be best, Mr. Chairman, to amend to delete the word patent because it says hold right title and interest to patents, trademarks, copyrights, and it's broader.
That would have to be a new section down there someplace, wouldn't it?
Two new sections, just amending each of those, striking the word patent.
And then you eliminate them from
this section.
All right. Is there any objection to that? Hearing none.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can I ask one other question?
Sure.
It seems to me in drafting this, has anybody contacted the Alaska Council on Science and Technology to you know, being how I wonder if they would see this in their purview. It seems to me that before we would adopt this legislation, we would need to, you know, we would need to know a little more about where, how they, that entity views themselves and so on, in terms of whether that, I'm not saying that an entity shouldn't have the whole job of the patents. The problem is, you know, we have chosen one, and we don't even know whether they see that.
Mr. Bennett.
Now, is he going to speak to this?
Well, this is the very first that the council has learned of this particular piece of legislation, and none of the council members themselves are aware of it at the present time. And I would certainly think that they would like to at least comment on the
Well, what we're doing is we're just drafting possible legislation, and of course it wouldn't be put in until January, so you have plenty of time, and I would advise possibly you that you might look at that.
There is a public council meeting on October 4th, where this certainly could be brought up.
Well, we'd like to have your comments on it. And if we don't hear them, then we won't know this. We won't feel that you have any worries.
Mr. Chairman, I called in drafting this, but I did a little preliminary to contact the council. I thought if I can get left out of the room on that. No better than to go talk to them about that. But in asking the question, I was phrased just a little bit here, looking at the purpose for the establishment of the council, and you can see the makeup is fairly diverse, and members have over. Two members shall be selected from different executive departments of state government having significant research activities. That's where most of the patents should be coming from. Two members shall be selected from the Alaska academic community. Two members must have significant activities or direct interest in research. Shall be selected from the general public, one from the legislature. And their purposes and powers pretty much covers all of those areas that would be expected to result in an invention or discovery. And it seemed like a logical choice, but they thought it was some input.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay.
Through the chair, please. Question for counsel. I know that no place do we have a provision for employees signing a statement to the effect that they understand that anything that they discover or invent at the state time would become property of the state. And it seems to be fairly customary from the private sector for employees, especially new employees, to sign such a statement, acknowledging the fact that they're aware of the laws that govern this. And I wondered whether or not thought of. Mr. Chairman, no, I have not. I just hadn't had any exposure to that concept. That seems like a fairly basic one now. I have two other, three other questions or comments, maybe. One, do you think it's advisable to add in the definition section a definition for discovery and a definition for invention?
Mr. Chairman, in response to that question, I believe that there is a definition in the federal regulations on it, and I was too disposed to go with that.
I guess my thinking was that whether or not it's a discovery or invention is something that can be decided when an individual says, I have a right, and if I want you to waive my, or not require me to assign any right because this is my baby, and furthermore, I want you to waive any interest that the state might have in it. But that's the type of thing that would be addressed rather than going into specific definition of discovery invention. I just didn't feel that comfortable with what I saw, but I didn't have a lot to look at either. All right, that's something worth considering. Okay.
The case was brought before this commission the last time.
We had an individual who developed a process, patented it, went to a private concern to have it produced and marketed it, in which case the state ended up paying for its own invention. Believe that the person did on state time. Shouldn't there be some provision in the law that says that the state is not required to pay for its own invention, but it mentions that it developed? We're getting a 20% sharing. Does that mean if an individual invents something on state time and it's patented by the state, then any time the state uses it, they have to pay 20% royalty to the individual?
Two people can't, Mr. Chairman. I don't think two people can hold the title to a patent. And the state of Alaska would hold the title to the patent, or the individual would. If the individual is getting 20%, it's because the state has the title to the patent and he can't sell something he doesn't have back to the state because he doesn't have that patent.
Okay, but
you're making provision in here for the employee to share in the benefits received from whatever invention or discovery that that employee might make to the minimum of 20%. If the state, in turn, develops or
produces this product and starts using it like in a fish hatchery. Does that mean that the employee then is entitled to it 20% of whatever numbers of boxes or processes are developed and used by the state? Or you want to talk about
the provision, Mr. Chairman, that would be correct, that any proceeds, net proceeds, at the cost of developing the patent
would inure to the benefit of 20% would under this provision to the benefit of the employee. Is that right?
I can see where if you're going to go out and you're going to produce something and use have a private sector develop
the product and market it around the world, where that 20% would fit in.
In the case of the state
taking the product, the process, developing and using it, the state is.
You're going to run into that problem of how do you determine what is 20% worth of what the state is doing in order to compensate the employee for the invention that that employee discovered.
Well, I think that's taken care of here. It belongs to the state if he did it during working hours and all the rest of it. You have that that says that it's set out if he discharges the obligations set out in 3952010, which is that he did it all on his own.
Okay, on the section 3952020, yeah.
The last part is
the I don't know, but it would seem to me what they're talking about here is that you get
20% if the state markets the product.
Would the state have a market of product? Who knows?
Market oil.
The state win the primary?
Okay. The last comment I have would be,
can we go on that? I think, though, just to carry that a little further, just using the example last time, I can understand what he's saying is what, for example, fish processing, let's say that, and that's what was patented last time, and the product is developed, and then the hatcheries start to use it, which what he was indicating is a cost savings to the state. Now,
you know, 20% of a share of the millions of dollars saved, you see what he's getting at? I mean, there could be a dollar figure put on what that process was, and it says here proceeds, but I don't know how that would be determined. What is a proceed? I mean, in terms of one state situation, we don't think of things in those sort of terms. We should, but we don't. I mean, normally we think of them not in a private sector terms of proceeds and that sort of thing.
Well, as I read this, if the guy, as it says under 010, if he made the invention on his own time, and the state says, okay, we're going to take that and put it into operation in the fishery or in the hatcheries, then he gets 20% of the net proceeds.
But you said there are no net proceeds in the sense that if the state doesn't sell it outside the state, all they're doing is taking the product and utilizing that product. If, in fact, they purchased it from outside, the patent, you know, in the process, they would have to pay for it, but they're not having to pay for it. And so is there any implication that the state would have to pay this individual additional money outside of his salary in order for them to use the product? And in this case, the process is what the individual is talking about, a patent.
Mr. Chairman, the way I perceive this happening under the drafted language is that a choice is made, that there has to be some decision whether or not it is the property of the state. And if it is the property of the state, and it's developed, in fact, is developed by the state, and used by the state to their advantage, that 20% of whatever someone would determine to be gross, the net proceeds, I should say. 20% of the net proceeds would go to the employee, and that would be a little more difficult to determine whether or not it's net proceeds, what net proceeds is, if the state's using it for their own benefit.
Yeah, but he has to assign it, or grant it, or license it, or other disposal, the guy that's got the patent. If he'd done it on his own, and the state wants to use it,
then he's free to negotiate,
then he can
whatever he wants to do.
And if he makes an assignment to him, then he gets 20% of the proceeds or an arbitrary figure that's figured out, right?
Mr. Chairman, I don't see it working that way. If an individual on his own time develops an invention, the state has no interest. Therefore, this 20% language doesn't even come into play. He is, as a private individual, is free to contract.
You're not reading this, though, my friend.
says a public officer who makes a discovery or invention and discharges the obligations set out here, that he did it all on his own. That's an 010, isn't it?
No. No, that said he did it on the state working hours.
Oh, I was, excuse me. I guess I'm too loose today. I see.
Right. You just add a sentence in that.
I have a question. If you're saying if they develop a process and say, for example, $10 million, if the employee and the state implements this process, then the employee who developed the process should be entitled to $2 million because the state saved 10. Is that correct?
That's not, Mr. Chairman, that's not covered specifically in here yet because we're talking about net proceeds, which connotes that there's going to be some sale of this ride. If they're going to be saving themselves money because they're not selling it to someone, but they're using the idea to save themselves money, that should be expressed and clarified in here. Some such language as gross proceeds, cost management, the correct page. The amount of the net proceeds shall be computed by or with the approval of the council for reasonable confidence.
The best way to get around that is just to write a simple one or two saying anything that's discovered on state time belongs to the state and nobody gets anything at any time other than the state and forget it.
I think that we should look very carefully at 020 before we approve that section. Most of the discoveries are very complicated and different than things that the state would sell. They're more processes and things that would actually save the state money, you know, that kind of thing. Particularly in the fish industry, which Alaska's in the forefront of. There are a lot of things that can happen in research.
But this is talking about actually selling it. It's talking about after collection.
Right, and I mean, if we make that clear that that's all we're talking about is where we're going, the state's going to sell a product, then I think then that clears that up. But if we're talking about where there's going to be cost savings, then I think it is unclear.
This provision does not contemplate anything other than sale of that. You know?
Okay, well, if that's what it contemplates, I think.
But we ought to make that clear if that's the will of the commission.
And what we do want an employee saves $90 million in cost savings.
We give them an outstanding evaluation.
Yeah, and
merit increase.
What are the three words there? Discharges the obligations. What are you saying there? That's what's throwing me all the time. What are the obligations?
Mr. Chairman, those are the obligations set out in the previous section under sub B. And that's if a public officer or employee makes a discovery or invention that is the property of the state.
Then why don't we put B then?
Good idea. And I'd be perfectly willing to draft any language that would include employee participation in cost savings that result from a discovery or invention by the employee that belongs to the state, that is the property of the state, if that's the will of the commission.
How about everybody seems to be, well, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like everyone's hung up on the fact that they don't want to give the employee anything, they're afraid he's going to get too much or something. How about a flat monetary award system depending on the magnitude of the invention or whatever, that they can receive award of so many, maybe 5,000, 10,000, depending on, and let the state make the determination based on the type of invention and the magnitude of savings to be derived from it. Why not go to an award system rather than sit here and try to determine whether the guy's going to get $2 million or $1 million or $5?
$2 million is a lot more than $5,000.
Well, that's really true. You have to understand something. You don't want to kill the incentive of the employee to develop, because there's a hell of a lot of people with good ideas in the state. But at the same time, if there was an award system, knowing that if he did that on even on state time, if he put forth that extra effort and developed something absolutely outstanding and awarded, you know, I mean, a guy getting a check, even a state employee, for $5,000.
How to do that? We'll eliminate the.
I get that from working in prisons. We award people all the time to prison.
No, we'll eliminate the merit increases and just make it on awards if you figure out they've done something good for the state. How's that?
Well.
I think we're getting off into a whole other subject,
and that's cash awards for an employee suggestion system.
Right.
I thought you were talking about patents.
Well, I thought it was necessarily a suggestion. It could apply to the development of patent, too.
Or even writing.
I mean, you don't get, you know, it depends on the amount that you want to set forth. You know, if an employee develops something that saves the state $10 million, there should be some type of award system that really, even if he does it on state time. Because he doesn't have to apply that incentive. He can just do his job every day and not apply any incentive. And still get his paycheck. But I'm saying if he puts forth extra effort to do
it. It would fit under the title because you're talking about discoveries and inventions. Sir?
Chairman, I was just going to suggest that that may be something that would never result in a patent. Could be something that would be used where the invention doesn't result in a patent, or it isn't even something that's patentable. It's just an idea that will reduce paperwork or whatever. But because of that, could be addressed in another bill. And
I think probably it should be in another bill, but it's one that should be investigated. I have no doubt that. There should be merit awards for people who spend their time constructively instead of worrying about how much they're going to make on the next pay raise. What did you say, Sherry?
I think we have a lot of employees like that. There's pros and cons of suggestion award programs, and I have seen it in some entities that come in with a suggestion award program, and there have been employees that were very innovative in the past and said, to heck with it. I come up with good ideas. That guy sitting over there that hasn't before but makes out all these papers, keeps getting suggestion awards. I keep installing suggestions that improve it around here, but I don't want to spend my time making out all the papers for the cash award.
Because the supervisor takes all the credit for it. I can't get her started today. But if I can't get you started. Huh?
If you leave that as a patentable item, a discovery and invention, just keep it to that. And let the council decide whether or not some sort of a monetary reward should be made for the state using it.
I think the keystone here is, has a patent been secured on it?
Patent.
Right.
And who has secured that patent?
And then we decide the proceeds. And I think what the council is correct. If it's not worth a patent, if the state looks at it and says it's not worth a patent,
the individual can go off on their own and secure it anyway.
I suggest we delete section 02. I don't think it's necessary to answer.
Mr. Chairman? Yes. Mr. Chairman? Ms. Lehrer, just a question. If the state holds patent to a process or an invention or discovery, can it actually go out and market that patent?
Mr. Chairman, there's no reason why they can't.
I guess I would oppose deleting it just for that thing, even though that probably the likelihood of that is pretty low. I think that if, in fact, the state does market something, I think at that point in time that the employee should be assigned some compensation for that. I mean, I think most private industry has some kind of mechanism on that, so the reward. I don't think it'll happen. I mean, the chances of that happening are pretty low. But
well, you overrode the chair again. Okay.
But you know, as long as we leave this as indicating proceeds where they actually market something and sell it,
let's be specific then.
See, yeah, I think
specific.
I would be for the state.
The state marketing the product.
Would you rewrite that section, Mr. Lear, to cover the issue? Because the state markets the product, and that comes in something. You've got to figure it out, get something out of it.
So you're still leaving up in the air if there's a patent and there's a cost saving, and the state says $9 million. What does
the
employee get?
His job.
Get the handshake and a merit award.
Get
the merit award. Why don't you, that's an arbitrary, that's a thing for arbitration. Put that in your next contract.
I think I'll just put the whole thing in my next contract.
You better hope you get another contract. What I hear from the grapevine is that as soon as those contracts are up, there isn't going to be any more contracts. You're going to be working on a week-to-week basis. You hear that, Dick?
I have a good senator.
Was it week to week?
Couple.
Or was it day to day?
Who knows?
I think you got a good point, Sherry, but I don't know how to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
Last comment I have for consideration. The revenues that are derived from the sale of any patent right or invention should
should probably go into a specific fund rather than into who knows where. I think it's left up in the air right now as to whether or not state agencies are the ones that accrue the revenues and how they dispose of it.
Oh, I need the legislature to decide where it should go.
I'll go into a certain fund where it
should go. Handle it.
This process is going to cost the state money.
Have it directed, in other words, rather than have it dispersed the way it is.
You have a director, not a dedicated directing fund, right?
There should be established a fund within such and such.
Well, whether Council of Science and Technology would hold the proceeds and distribute the 20% to the employee or how it, there should be somebody that's empowered to do that.
I
think after they reimburse the state for the cost in developing it over the years, then maybe we go on to where the money's going to go after that.
You mean just have it go right into the general fund?
I don't think so.
I think what you're going to have a problem with, and this is on your line, Sherry, is that if you have something like that, and all of a sudden the legislature had a $2 million price tag just for some individual to figure it out, some state employee to figure it out a process while he was working, if you're going to have some hollers and yells at the... You're really going to hear some hollers then.
Dick, how about having something like the patent fund dividend?
There you go.
The permanent one.
Why don't everybody get $100 as an incentive to invent something?
I think we ought to have a Blue Ribbon Commission of Congressional Medal. It'll be in Alaska for 20 years. Kevin?
Yes.
I'd like to ask Mr. Lear about what do you mean by discoveries? How does that fit into this? Mr. Chairman, I don't have an answer for what a discovery is. It seems like a simple thing when your first impression, discovery isn't something that's found by someone. It's a nice idea. But when it comes to putting it in words that are not too limiting,
discovery is a process and an invention is a material item, probably. That's what it comes down to, isn't it? I think that's what it means, Mr. Lear. The discovery is a process, and the other is a factual hard thing. One is software, and the other is hardware. I guess that's the easiest way to say it.
I'm trying to see whether or not there is a definition in the federal law for invention. Includes any art, machine, manufacture, design, or composition of matter, or any new and useful improvement thereof.
That's hardware.
Or any variety of plant, which is or may be patentable. The discovery language came from Connecticut, and they did not decide to give a definition of discovery.
Why don't you look that up and don't take a trip back. I mean, just look it up. The question I have, Mr. Chairman, to follow up on that.
I think that's what it is, though, Dick. It's software, is it for processes and the hard actual inventions? So.
Well, what if we had a geologist, as an example, looking at the Division of Natural Resources, and he happened to be out in the field, and he made a discovery, gold, lead, or oil, or whatever. No. Is there any possibility he would fall into this particular legislation?
If it's patentable.
If it comes to 20% or whatever.
If you've done it with state facilities, equipment, materials, funds, or information.
But that wouldn't be patentable.
It wouldn't be able to patent that, no.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I will come up with some definitions for invention and discovery for the commission to toss around.
Okay. Council may adopt rules. Okay. All right, then if you would go ahead and do that for us, and we'll pick that up on our next meeting on the discoveries and inventions.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, could I have one thing clarified on the proceeds provision, sharing in proceeds? What's that?
I think trying to come up with the definition of sale.
or not necessarily defining it, but narrowing it to those instances where a sale actually occurs of a patent, of an interest in the patent, might be very limited. Perhaps the committee would want to consider just specifying
that this does not pertain to, or does not apply to, savings in state expenditures that result from an invention. The language on page 2 is about line 26 and 27 is fairly broad language that relates to ways in which an interest can be disposed of and not always sold. In any net proceeds that may be derived from assignment, grant, license, or other disposal of discovery or invention, it seems advisable to me, rather than try and limit it to an instance where this, where an interest is sold, but yet clarify that it does not apply to merely to reductions in state expenditures or costs incurred by state entities.
I don't even know what you said. Ken?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if we're talking about when there's revenues realized by the state from this patent, there's a willingness to share it. But when there's not a revenue realized, it's cost avoidance or something else, there's nothing to share. Yes, Mr. Chairman, and those revenues may be achieved by some means other than an outright sale of an interest in that, right? Now, you want to clarify, that's what the commission wants then is a direction to come up with language for revenues.
Right. Revenues only.
Very good.
Okay. If there are no other questions, thank you, Mr. Leary. You can sit there if you want to, because we're going to get into some more right now, but I don't know. Do you have any comments, Bennett?
No, sir, not at this time. I'll certainly get this post out to the council, and I think we've had comments, but I'm sure there's something to you.
The next is the act relating to collective bargaining. Now, there was a...
Mr. Chairman, if I might just for the record, it suggests there's another big area. We talked about patents here. There's another big area that we haven't even suggested, and I don't think we should bring it up at this, take it up at this time, but that's copyright. And the biggest thing coming up is computer software and copywriting that software.
Mr. Lear, draft some language on copyright?
Mr. Chairman, I would observe for the commission's benefit that in surveying the various states, there is very little on copyrights also. There are a few states that use the same approach. They hit universities and they say how university employees are going to be treated in regards to copyright material. And it's usually pretty favorable. They, you know, they copyright most of their own stuff, not just something that commission directly could be done.
I know you,
but there's also a dirt.
I know you, copyright.
Would you like that to be?
I'm sure you'll do your best. I'm sure you'll come with something. Separate. I have a utmost confidence. Okay, the last time we could bring something.
Mr. Chairman, getting back to these proceeds question. What if the state allows another state to use the same process? That is when, you know, if they granted it gratis, it's because of the common good
of the states.
Employee gets
part of the zero.
Yeah.
There's going to be a sale, the state could just
have it happen.
The
state could,
couldn't
they? They could sign that to anybody.
I know some of the past is there. Was put in on another bill. Next, we have the act relating to collective bargaining. Now, there was a different language that was put in on a piggybacked onto a House bill. Do you remember that, Sherry?
Yeah, we put in at one point.
Yeah,
it passed the Senate, but it didn't pass the House. And wherein we put the language in there that it had to be taken care of, and I can't remember. I put the language in there, I remember that, but I can't remember where it was.
Yeah, they had, it was different
language
in this, but it was the same concept, but they had to address.
Right, right.
In terms of
right. That was in the last, what, week or so?
Yeah, right at the decision.
Okay, so we'll get that out. We'll drag that out for next meeting.
Mr. Chairman?
Sir?
Just one observation regarding Section 1 and Subsection B. If the proper interpretation of that subsection the following, that if an agreement entered into between an organization and a state is not submitted within 30 days after the convening of the next regular session, that it would not be heard by that session?
No.
No.
Well, it says you have to submit within 30 days, so if we're in negotiations, negotiations aren't completed until February or March, does that mean we have to wait for the next session in order to reintroduce it because we didn't meet the 30-day timeline?
No, that was not the intent.
Well, I'm not saying whether or not it was the intent. I'm just saying the way it reads.
Well, you're reading it one way, and we're reading it some other way. Okay. And I think if you look at A, you'll see that this fits in with A. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. It would appear that if there is an ambiguity, it would appear. But I think with A, if you read it in context with A, then it sums it up. That isn't the idea. But the idea is that the legislature must act within 30 days.
But there,
the other language that we have is very clear, even Dick voted for it.
So we'll hold that for the next meeting. And the next one is the adjustment of retirement benefits.
Can we submit that last year, Dick?
Well, it was introduced 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
It had hearings in Senate State Affairs and ended the session in Senate Judiciary, I believe, anyway, in the second committee of the
floor. It didn't get put in the housekeeping bill?
I thought
it
this was in there.
It may have been, but did not. No. Senate State Affairs decided that this should remain on its own rather than be put in the housekeeping bill they passed out. It may have made it into the bill that ended up on the House Speaker's desk.
I thought this passed.
I thought it went into the housekeeping.
Yeah.
It did not pass.
I'm sure it did.
No, I even checked the new session laws that came out to verify that.
Put it back in.
I have one question about the retroactive date.
May I make a comment on it, Mr. Chairman?
No. Yes, Fred. Go ahead.
I think it's somewhat arbitrary to develop a 2-year statute of limitations, which is what this basically is, without having the ability to look at whether or not hardship is involved, whether or not you're talking about whatever the amount might be. You might be talking about tens of thousands of dollars.
You made the error, and it wasn't the fault of the individual, pal. That's too bad.
But there is a vehicle that presently exists to allow people to appeal an administrative error.
We went through this whole thing. We discussed it. From one end to the other.
Appreciate it. Red shoes down in Fort Townsend.
We went through this thing with great detail.
Mine, the employee that made the error. The manager.
And the poor little old lady, they were going to take away her money to eat on.
Let me tell you, the changes
now. The guy always took your place, or you were taking his place, sit there and said, well, gee, I sure feel sorry about that little old lady, but there's nothing I can do about it.
The 2-quart of blood shed by Paul Arnold here would be in vain if we changed it right now.
The only comment I'd make is that under the hardship provisions, there is a different direction that Department of Benefits is taking with respect to that, in terms of waiving or allowing certain aspects to go into it without having to go through an appeal.
Your comment is well received and no action will be taken.
We're not going to get this legislation prior to the appointment.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question that the Commission might want to address, and that is whether the retroactive date in Section 3 on line 27 should remain July 1st, 1979. That effective date was chosen to address the Julie Isaac case, which I believe has been resolved now. She was the woman who testified before us and initiated our concerns.
As long as it was good in that date, it's still good in this date.
Okay.
And that's not arbitrary.
That's just capricious.
We'll put this back in again? Okay. On the membership vacancy, I would like to hold that over one more meeting. We're going to have a meeting again here in October, probably around the 17th or something like that.
You're out of town at some point, then, I think.
Sometime in October, within the next 3 or 4 weeks, so we can get these two or three things put together. And what?
There's a coal study meeting on the 19th, the AFN convention is the 21st and 22nd.
Well, it won't be the 21st or 22nd. It won't be in a period between 22nd of October and the 5th of November. It won't be in that period.
How about after the 16th of October, between the 16th and 20th, somewhere in there?
That's what I said, around the 17th.
Target area there?
Yeah, right. Around the 17th is what I got in my mind somewhere.
We going to hold a meeting in general?
Sure.
Yes. Why don't we all go to Anchorage, Mr. Chairman, and we could campaign against the anti-capitalism. We all go out through the bars and get some votes.
Well, we're putting together 200 people in a chartered aircraft, and we're going to come up at the bush and explain the capitalism to everybody.
You know the bush will deliver your votes. Right. You better worry about Anchorage.
Well, all I'm doing is responding to constituency.
I said
they want to take 200 people up to Anchorage. If they send 50 out to Eagle River, they'd only get 25 back.
Amen.
You're going to have some subs. You're going to have some guys laying off on the side. We run in the last moment.
They all better wear black vests if they're going out there.
Better be a hit and run mission.
Or get some of those old leather collars like the Marines used to wear. Rednecks will kill them.
I got a good idea what we should do with the, you know, Tom Fink keeps saying that it's only going to cost $200 million. I'd like to put an ad in the paper. Would Arliss lie to you? Back in 76, Arliss, or 78, whatever, Arliss said it's going to cost $900 million to sign the paper. How come with 5 years of inflation on top of that? And when you consider the indemnification for Juno, it's, what, $500 million?
But Juno doesn't have to be indemnified, according to Mr. Fink. We won't lose any property value.
Well, if he gets to be governor, maybe he'll quit like he did last time when he was in the legislature.
It's not even talked that way.
We have the disciplinary actions in it. I tell you the truth, I haven't been able to do too much of these. Has anybody had a chance to look at these very much? I'd like to have members to look this over real good so that we're going to take that up next time. Okay? We've got to do something with that. Anything for the order?
Yes. Even in spite of our good senator's feelings on patents, we are having a reception at the APDA meeting room, which is downstairs in our building, next Monday at noon. It's a hosted luncheon to honor Senator Ray. Everyone's invited.
What's the occasion?
You can't
follow
that up.
Next Monday?
Monday.
They're going to drum me out of the APDA.
Sounds like a roast.
Who's going to get roasted?
Oh, unfortunate. I sure hate the message.
You can't have it. travel on that, Jack. In fact, I'll send you some other places. Okay. Is there anything else come? All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Are there still possibilities we'll have more applicants for this position on the commission? Or are these the ones we're going to deal with?
We'll take applications at the last moment.
Manager, I'd like to solicit one from the young man at the end of the table. He's been the most cooperative individual here all day.
And he's been busy all the time.
Justin, you'll probably do very well, too.
Would you like to tell us how that guy got away from the jail up there?
Do you really want to hear that?
Yeah. We got a couple of minutes.
Good, I'll tell you. It was strictly a lack of regulations and procedures on the roof post and the internal post, which takes the prisoner out, gets him ready to go to the internal yard, the courtyard, and then you're supposed to wait till the other officer gets out and signifies he's in position. And upon investigating the regulations there was procedure for inside supervision of the prisoner while he was in the yard, but no one knows how the officer ever got to the roof, why he ever started supervising from the roof. And what it was pilot error, which most of them are. The guy let the prisoner out in the yard, went back to his post while the other officer was drawing his equipment to go up on the roof. And of course, they're holding high security felons at 6th Avenue. Those are under $300,000, $500,000 bail, very heavies. And the guy's up on the roof with just a little radio, which means if the guy wanted out and got a good leap through the wire, I suppose the guy wouldn't be able to stop him anyway, unless he hit him with his antenna. We've since changed that, by the way. The only thing he hasn't got up there now is a 50 caliber. He's got a 30, but no, he's very well equipped now, and he has procedures to do his job, so I assume he won't lose anyone.
Did you recover?
Pardon?
Did you recover?
Got him the same day. We would have been in trouble had the second one not with him didn't break his leg, because he was a bad one, too. That's Contreras. He got out, he'd escaped from the courthouse. He'd escaped three other times. And, of course, internally, because they were so crowded.